Hello, my name is Dr. Samuel Kim.
And I'm Sharon Kim.
And welcome to Research Sense for Korean American Therapy, a podcast that removes barriers and gives you a rundown of the latest Korean American mental health research. Hello, today's article is entitled Predicting Psychological Distress Amid the COVID-19 Pandemic by Machine Learning, Discrimination and Coping Mechanisms of Korean Immigrants in the U.S. It was authored by Shinu Choi, Juyoung Hong, Yongjae Kim, and Haejun Park. All right, what is this article about, Sharon?
This article was really interesting because it was written in 2020. That was a year after the pandemic started, and it really wanted to study the effects of the pandemic on Korean Americans. So I think this is the only study that we actually found that was related to that. And so we wanted to kind of read and study this to see what were the effects and how were people impacted by the pandemic.
And COVID-19 was something that upended everyone's lives, but you're right, this is an article that's specific about Korean Americans. I suppose before we dive too deep into it, what was it like for you going through COVID, Sharon?
I must say it was difficult. We were privileged in the sense that my husband and I were able to work from home. But I think one thing that we talked about, Dr. Sam, like what really helped us get through that hard time of loneliness, the pandemic, the racism, all these things. And I think I was thinking about that and I thought one of my happiest memories of spending time with family was actually during the pandemic because we were stuck at home. We were living at that time when the pandemic started, we were living with my in-laws, and because they were immunocompromised, we really had to be careful. And so we were stuck at home 24/7, but we turned that into an opportunity to kind of spend quality time with each other. So we would bake stuff together. We would cook for one another, make brunch in the morning and kind of like on the weekends, right? And watch movies together. And I think we really had a good time. I think that was what helped me get through that period.
And if I remember correctly, there was a new little member of the family that joined during that time, wasn't there?
We adopted a puppy like during the pandemic as well. And so it was a great time to just spend, you know, COVID puppies, they say, where they are 24/7 stuck with you. And we were training her a lot, Bebe, and it was great. She gave us a lot of joy. And I realized why animal supports are really, you know, helpful and for your emotional and I guess, behavioral support and need. So
yes, there is a thing called therapy dogs and it's no wonder why they exist.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was so great. How about you, Dr. Sam?
Yeah, I had I think with a lot of people, similarly difficult experience through COVID. I think it was initially less about the emotional toll of isolation and more of just how do I change these classes I've always taught in person to online? And how do I take into consideration what this virtual and like everyone else is isolated? It's like, how do I get them to demonstrate their skills? For instance, one of the classes I was teaching at the time was teaching psychologists how to give IQ tests to children. And part of the course, they have to practice giving IQ tests to children. Mm-hmm. But what do you do when you have to isolate and you don't have easy access to children in the area? And so we had to get very creative and figure out like, how do I get them to demonstrate these skills without demonstrating these skills like they've always done before? Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of thought that was put into that. One of the things I learned going through COVID was time was not the issue for me doing things that I needed to get done. Because, you know, like, oh, I'm going to take care of this chore in the house, or I'm going to do this if I had more time. And during COVID, I had all of this time. I was like, nope, time was not the problem. That was something I learned. And I learned to be compassionate to myself too. And, you know, realizing that, yes, I'm home more often, but it doesn't mean that I'm more productive. Just because I have that additional time doesn't mean that I'm capable of doing more. And frankly, through all the stressors, I didn't expect myself to be the same level of productivity as before as well. And then lastly, I was able to connect with friends that I haven't talked to in years, you know, virtually through Zoom, because everyone was at home during that time. And, you know, playing video games. I was joking with you, Sharon, before, and I said that, yeah, the thing that I used to get yelled at as a kid by my mother for playing too much video games was the thing that kept me going during COVID, because I was connecting with others. So it was like a social activity. And I think that was really important, giving me that resilience I needed to move forward. Mm-hmm. But not all of us, not all Asian Americans were as fortunate as us, as we know that as of recently, we've had over 85 million cases of COVID in the country with over a million deaths. And then according to statistics that have been gathered by the Stop AAPI hate site, there have been numerous instances of racism and just hate crimes that have happened across the country. And that's something that the article referred to. It talked about a lot of these issues that were happening. So that's where the reasoning for this article came from. There's a lot happening that's happened to Asian Americans. And just to give a little sample of things that happened, what were some of the statistics that the website collected?
Yeah, so 6 out of 10 of respondents in the National Anti-Asian American Racism Survey responded that they had directly experienced some sort of active discrimination. And almost half of Asian Americans report anxiety during the pandemic, with 15% showing depressive symptoms. And I wanted to look into what does discrimination look like for Asian Americans? What did it look like during the pandemic and even now? And according to Stop AAPI Hate survey, and this is the latest report that goes through December 31st of last year, verbal harassment was the most common incident that was reported. And that was 63% of all incidents reported included verbal harassment as a discrimination. Physical assault was 16%. And then almost half of all the hate incidents happened in public areas, such as mm-hmm. in streets and transit. And we've heard of news stories, right? Yeah. Of coverages where people are just walking down the street and they get attacked. Our elderly population was attacked as well. And so that was really heart-wrenching. And also, it's not just, you know, what I thought of, because these things I had seen in the news. And so I was expecting, you know, oh yeah, public incidents that happened. But there were also civil rights violations that happened. So there were workplace discrimination, refusal mm-hmm. of service just because of the way you look, being barred from taking public transit, or housing-related discrimination. And these were actually, 1 out of 10 incidents were about these civil rights violations.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, these acts of discrimination, there's a variety of these, and we just know that it's happened a lot. And so these aren't just like, you know, someone avoiding another person on the streets. Like, these are actual deliberate acts that are happening. Mm-hmm. And racial discrimination is not something that, unfortunately, is not something that's new to our country. It's something that's been seen throughout its history. Mm-hmm. And we're just seeing different forms of it happening to different groups. Mm-hmm. So the big question that comes up is, we know a lot of these acts make people feel really not good. Like, makes people feel unsafe. It makes people feel isolated. It makes people feel awful. However, not everyone ends up in the doldrums from those things. There are some who are able to cope with it in some way and carry on. Mm-hmm. And one aspect of the study is to look at, well, what were some of those aspects of resilience and mm-hmm. where did it come from? And I think that's a really important question to ask. It's not just how are these acts of discrimination harming the community, but also for the few or the group that it didn't, I won't say didn't harm, I'll say that they were able to kind of pick up and move on. What was so special about them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I really love that aspect of this research article, that they not only focus on the harmful effects of discrimination, but also what are the characteristics of people who were able to move on. And they called this coping mechanisms. What were the coping mechanisms that worked for certain people during this hard time? What is effective against discrimination and mental health distress is having high resilience. So that was something they described, is having high resilience actually provides a buffer to depressive symptoms for the Korean American community. And also another coping mechanism that they mentioned based on previous studies was social support from other people in the same minority, Korean minority group, as well as social support from family members and friends. So those two were mentioned, and we'll kind of look into, were they really effective during the pandemic?
Especially with these acts of racial discrimination that happen. So those are the two big questions. What were the effects of discrimination during COVID on the mental health of Korean Americans? Mm-hmm. And then secondly, what coping mechanisms were helpful or useful in buffering those mental health issues? So how did they conduct this study? Well, they surveyed 790 Korean immigrants who were either born in another country or here in the US. And they were all from 42 different states. So that's a pretty nice spread across the country. Yeah. About half had an income of about 50,000 or above, and a little bit more than half were employed full time. The participants filled out several different surveys as part of this. They filled out surveys on psychological distress, their experiences with discrimination related to their race, COVID, ethnicity. They filled out surveys on resilience and social supports. One interesting thing about this study is that they did not collect the participants from a local area. They use, I believe, Amazon Mechanical Turk, which is an online survey tool that's used by researchers now to find out, kind of get a larger spread, as well as people from different areas. Mm-hmm. All right. So I'm sure our listeners are curious as to what they found and thinking, all right, did racial discrimination during COVID cause mental health problems amongst Korean Americans?
Yes, it did. It definitely did.
And done. We're done with the episode now.
That's all you need to know. It did. No. but there's a panjang. This is a Korean word for, what is that Korean? What is that English word? It's a panjang. I think there's a twist. There's a twist to the story.
I'm sitting here thinking it's like panjang. Like the Korean pancake thing.
No, there is a twist to this, because something that caught me off guard. Okay, so the one result they found, right, was that yes, discrimination that people experience and feel every day, especially that was related to COVID-19 discrimination, that had a negative impact on Korean American mental health. But that wasn't the first thing that was the most prominent. That wasn't the first thing that impacted their mental health. You know what the first thing that impacted their mental health during COVID was?
What was that?
It was resilience.
Really?
So resilience was the strongest predictor of mental health for Korean Americans. So if you had a high resilience during COVID or in general, right, this was a stronger predictor of your mental health and how you're doing, more than how many times you're discriminated or what kind of discrimination you experience outside.
So if you have this resilience thing, it was a powerful protection against you having mental health issues because of the discrimination that's occurring. And we do know that there is a strong relationship between discrimination and mental health. And so if you have this coping mechanism, things like it protects you, it's almost like if discrimination was a really cold day and mental health is you just walk outside, you're going to get cold. But resilience is how many layers of coats and sweaters can we put on to protect you from the cold out there? And so what you're saying is, yeah, having a coat and the sweaters and all these things, or I guess we're Korean American, so if you have a nebok on, then
it's underwear, I guess. Well,
yeah, like long johns and like, you know, thermal wear underneath.
Thermal wear underwear. Yeah.
That was a stronger predictor of you being okay than whether or not you were discriminated. That's really interesting. Mm-hmm.
So resilience was the strongest predictor of your mental health. Discrimination that you experienced was the second predictor. The next one was social support. Whether you had more friends and family to lean onto, that was a really strong predictor of how you were doing your mental health distress during the pandemic.
Yeah, those social supports. So even when we were sharing earlier and talking about, you know, what brought us through the pandemic and the isolation period, we both talked about people that we developed relationships and we were close to and how that helped us to get through things. And I think that's something that's really important. So let's jump into the implications, because I think these are pretty clear implications that we can talk about here. So based on these results, what does this mean for Korean Americans?
I think one thing to acknowledge before we jump into, let's be resilient, you know, but before we jump into that, I think it's okay for us to just acknowledge that looking at this research study and the results, that we are really being impacted by COVID and the pandemic and racism and the discrimination we have to go through. We can't just, you know, brush it off and say, no, I'm gonna, you know, it doesn't matter. But I think what we could do is just give ourselves a break. I really liked what you mentioned, Dr. Sam, and I don't know if you remember this, but during the pandemic, like in the first few months of the pandemic, I told you, I think we were doing a book club, and during one of our book clubs, I said, you know, I don't know what's wrong with me these days. I feel so tired. I don't want to do anything. I feel like I'm not being productive enough. And I was more productive before. I know what my capacity is, right? And you said, you know what, Sharon, I don't even expect to do half of the things I used to do before the pandemic. And I lowered that bar for myself. And when you said that, that just gave me a sense of freedom, permission to be like, oh, those external factors do affect my mental health. And I should take that into consideration when I'm expecting all these things instead of badgering myself or beating myself over for not producing enough, for not being productive enough, just being okay with, I just need to do 50% of what I used to do because I'm going through all these things. I think that was a huge reminder and also relief for me to think that way.
Wow, that was very wise. I wish I could say I remember saying that to you. But I completely agree with that. COVID was a very stressful time period, and we all acknowledge of the big stressors that were going on, but we were also suffering from a lot of the little stressors too. For example, just not seeing people for an extended period of time, or even going to the grocery store was something you had to stop and think about. It's like, okay, do I have this? Do I have this? Am I safe in doing this? All of those take a toll over time. And when you add it all up, it really exhausts you. It tires you out, makes it hard for you to even want to do certain things. And so that self-compassion, I think, is essential for realizing as well as kind of forgiving yourself, because my gosh, through COVID, that was not the time to continue beating yourself up to make things worse. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so all these things during COVID. And then when you add on top of it, racial discrimination and perceived discrimination during that time, yeah, it has a huge negative impact on anyone, but the study was showing that it had a huge negative impact on Korean Americans. One of the things that Sharon mentioned was the power of resilience. And I want to be very clear about resilience. Being resilient does not mean that you are good at chamoing. And I don't know what the English translation for that is. What is chamo?
Bottling it up?
Bottling it up or holding it back. I guess that's a good definition of it. And that's not resilience. Resilience comes from a lot of different things, like your hope for the future, your ability to cope with things in the present. And I personally don't see resilience is completely independent from social support. I mean, those are two different ideas, but I think they're interrelated. Mm-hmm. So we talked a lot about social supports, and even in our examples of you, Sharon, building a relationship with your parents, me reaching out and connecting with friends. Mm-hmm. Having good social supports, I think, adds to your resiliency. Mm-hmm. And it's not just family and friends and important people in your life. But I want to add to that, do you have family members and friends or someone important in your life whom you can talk to without judgment? Mm-hmm. That you can fully be yourself. You don't have to, you know, protect yourself and say certain things or not say certain things, but these are people that you can openly talk to and be free with. Mm-hmm. And I think that aids in one, building social supports, and B, adds to that resilience. It kind of gives you perspective and hope for, you know, whatever it is that you're going through.
Mm-hmm. And if you're a parent, I also wanted to share that in MSG workshops where I work with parents, I teach them the concept of resilience. And I tell them, you know, in order to teach your children resilience, what do you need to do? And one of the things that I notice Korean parents doing a lot is not even letting their children fail, because it's the heart of the parent to not want to see their child suffer or fail or be in agony. I usually notice Korean parents hovering around their kids, not letting them fail, and like, oh, don't go that way because you're going to fall, or, you know, and academically as well as professionally. And they're always giving advice because they don't want their kids to fail and not have to try so many things and just go to success, right? That successful route. But it's only through failure and through the child learning to pick themselves up from a challenge or from a failure or from a difficulty that they're going to grow their strength of resilience. And mm-hmm. So letting them fall and then pick themselves back up again, and being just walking alongside of them, being immersed with them, being empathetic, listening to them non-judgmentally, that really helps our children grow their resilience. And so if you're wondering as a parent, okay, this is great, but how do I, my child who's been growing up during the pandemic, isolated from their peers and their school, or even going to school in fear and anxiety, you know, how do I grow resilience for my children? I think that's one way to consider is, how do I, as a parent, walk with them instead of just not letting them fall and trying to prevent that, but just walking with them and being sympathetic to what they're experiencing, I think will be a gateway or a step towards raising resilient children.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point to make. It's not just what supports do you have, but are you a support yourself? Are you someone who can listen to someone without mm-hmm. judgment or bias, particularly parents with their kids? Like, can you listen to what your child is going through and not be dismissive mm-hmm. or, you know, think that that's not that big of an issue? Mm-hmm. And are you a friend that others can lean on and depend on and talk to when they're going through something difficult in their lives? Wow, there's a lot to talk about from this article, and frankly, lots of great stuff in here. And I hope that all of you will go out and connect with others and build your social supports and build your resilience. Mm-hmm. What episode do we have prepared for our audience next time?
I am really excited about this next episode because I love learning about older Korean Americans. So the next episode is titled Willingness to Use Mental Health Counseling and Antidepressants in Older Korean Americans, The Role of Beliefs and Stigma About Depression.
That sounds really interesting. Well, we hope you'll join us next time. Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed our episode, please subscribe to our podcast and check out more at mustardseedgeneration.org
and samuelykim.com. To keep these episodes coming, rate and share on wherever you listen to this podcast.